is your problem? We know you've got him. We've seen him coming in and out of here.
Even if Jay was here, there's no way we'd hand him over. What do you want with him anyway?
Didn't you hear what he was saying in the game?
That's all it is, you idiot. A game. Can't you see what Ram's doing? He's getting you all to do his dirty work for him.
Except for us, it's not work. It's pleasure.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 44 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
And Sabine.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 44, the screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Costa Boats, and the episode synopsis were read out by myself. Jay discovers that he's a wanted man, but with the streets a deadly playground, where can he go and who can he trust? Pride struggles to ground himself in reality, while Patch has a confession to make. So, we start off in the mall, where Patch eventually recognises the mystery hooded man from the game as Pride. Though the rest of the Morats are in complete denial as the photo could be anyone. Though Selene is angry that Pride may have broken his promise to stay away from the game, Lex plays down the danger to Jay, as surely even the people most hooked in the game will recognise the difference between real life and reality space. However, we are then immediately cut to a scene of Jay very much in danger from the mob. So yeah, what do you make of all the background scene setting to this Jay-centric episode?
I guess it's entertaining to watch. It's not bad. Crowd control, extras, icing him, the spectacle can be a little fun to take in. You get the sense that there's nowhere safe for Jay to go. He want to go to the mall, which is where he would have safe haven, but he doesn't want to endanger the people there. So that's established. And he's not like he's friends with anyone else in the city. So where can he go? You got him on the run. That can be fun, I suppose, if you're just here for some entertainment value. Do I care that Jay's in danger? No, I feel that they failed to make me worry about him. And I can't remember how worried I was the first time I saw it when I still liked him, so...
That's a good question. Now I'm wondering if I ever worried about him. Probably not. But I never really liked Jay anyway, so... But yeah, I agree, there's no real sense of urgency.
Yeah. There's just something, I don't know if it's because it's like... You don't believe for a second anything truly bad's going to happen to Jay since he gets out of scrape after scrape after scrape just because the plot needs him to. It's just hard to believe he's actually in any kind of danger for real, it's trying. The narrative is trying very hard to convince you he is. Everybody's worried about him, seriously worried about him. And they're out in the street trying to find him and stuff. And yet I don't think it works because of how his story has been told. He just feels safe. He feels completely safe, and it's not because he's a main character, because main characters have been in danger before. Well, I have felt they did a good enough job making me believe, holy crap, you know what I mean? Like Bray being tied to a stake, even though my logical brain is like, Bray's the main character. They're not going to kill him this way. And not to mention, we got a rescue in the background coming for him. I still felt the danger that he was in. I was in the story. I felt it. Like, the Guardian is serious about this. And Trudy is brainwashed. She will light him on fire, even if she didn't want to. And I don't know. I don't feel that the way the main characters are handled this season makes me concerned for their safety.
I don't think there's anyone in the series at the moment that I would have actually been worried for if they'd been, in Jay's shoes. Because you're right, there's really no one that would get us worried right now. Nobody who's been played to be in danger this much And it definitely doesn't feel like Ram's really serious about, you know, wasting Jay.
I thought it was comical that they show Patch looking at, it's very clearly pride in the game, but the picture he printed off, like, why was that the picture? It doesn't even show his face. You clearly were watching him in the game. You had a clear image of him. And it's so obviously pride, but the one you printed off, it's like the top and back of his head. Like, come on.
It's just a really crappy screenshot.
It's so stupid.
He hasn't made thousands of him, obviously.
Like, why? Don't show us that Patch could clearly see his face if the picture he's going to print off doesn't even show his face. Like, just don't do that.
I don't understand that.
Especially since we've had picture perfect printouts of, well, actual pictures throughout this mall.
And I did, like, it makes sense that Celine goes right into denial. And I did like the scene between her and Lex. I think that scene could have been so much better if they had really worked on these two in their friendship. And trying to keep them all together, trying to keep the tribe together all this season, and having to be partners who often differ on how they want to go about keeping their family together. But because they haven't worked on Celine and Lex's relationship, and half the season Lex was not even paying attention to what was happening in the mall, they never told him anything that was even happening. This moment where he's, you know, having to be a comfort to her as she admits the truth, that she knows it's pride, and Lex is trying to help her deal with that. It just doesn't hit, and it just sucks because it's like it could have been a great moment between the two of them if they'd been established as having built a friendship through fire this season. But they didn't do anything with these two, so I don't know. It just doesn't work.
Like the whole moment where Celine has those flashbacks to what Pride was saying in his like vegetative state should have been a good moment, should have been a really powerful moment for her. Like he is still addicted, this is still him, I have to like help him, but it just felt flat because nothing's been built up, nothing's working here. I just felt nothing in that whole scene. Like, well, and okay, yeah, this does annoy me. I can't help it. Like what Lex says, like what? Okay, people are hooked to the game, fine, I get that. Rams played with everyone's minds, that's fine. But people not recognize reality from putting on a VR headset, this is what gets me. I don't get that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, they
like,
didn't.
You can't tell the difference between running out into the streets. Like, really?
And that's where it comes back to kick them. It kicks them in the butt with their storytelling of really delving into how the game affects you. They were spectacle instead of strong storytelling, and they had the characters to do that with, and they didn't. They were consistent across the board, and basically, game makes you crazy unless it doesn't. That's the way they chose to explain it. And again, like Pride, fine, he got a special dose. May, fine, she was literally in captivity. But you still haven't explained why you got a whole city of kids who've lost their minds, but you've got two kids in the mall who played the game and are perfectly fine. You've got other kids who've just never bothered. It's just all over the place. The game affects people the way the plot wants it to, just so we can have chaos. And so, yeah, you aren't going to feel anything when it comes to this climax where you have a city of kids who aren't supposed to be able to tell the difference between real and not real. And we're supposed to care. We're supposed to feel that, wow, this is a dangerous situation. But this is, like I said, the end of the disaster movie, those last 20 minutes, you have to care if the people matter, like make it. And if you haven't built them up over the disaster, you don't care if the disaster kills them.
Yep. It's odd, though, that out of all these people in the mall, Lex is the one to plane down any dangers. Because whereas Celine and Patch and such haven't been into reality space, Lex has.
Yeah.
And he's seen how people responded to him being on CityNet and in reality space.
But I mean that,
like, he got fangirls from it.
That's just the way the characters have been written. You know what I mean? Like, they don't mm-hmm. actually think about the characters when they decide whether they're going to be in opposition or pro something, whether they're going to be worried or downplaying something. When Lex is worried, it's Celine who's downplaying it. When Celine is worried, it's Lex downplaying. That's just, that's all it is. The script just calls for someone has to be concerned, someone has to not be concerned. And they don't really care who to. Now, again, if they had bothered to do any real character work, you could imply that Lex is just trying to keep Celine from overstressing about Pride because he cares about her and he's trying to shore her up. But there hasn't been any character work for them together or even apart as people. So it's just a mindless thing the script has him say. Oh, it's not a big deal. It's not that serious because she's worried and someone has to not be worried to oppose her in the script. I'm sorry. I wish I had more to say about this.
I've just got nothing else I can think of.
I thought it was cool and the kids were chasing Jay. Pretty much. Shit.
I was all for that.
Fun shot.
And even those kinds of shots have been done better. We've seen them chase people down those same streets.
Following on from this, while trying to escape the crowds, Jay runs into Ginny, who hides him. But it soon becomes clear that she too is hooked on the game.
What are you doing?
Turning you in. Yeah, I guess it's pretty lame of me. I feel really bad about it, Jay. You've got to believe me.
Why?
A lifetime pass to all future games? What's a girl to do?
You're hooked on reality space.
Spare me the lecture. And don't move. I'm not afraid to use this.
So, yeah, how did you react to Ginny's betrayal?
I think the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, nice. Okay. I mean, the whole thing felt a little sketchy anyway. But, you know, I thought she played it out pretty well. So I was like, okay. That was actually kind of cool. This time I didn't feel anything because I was like, I don't care about Ginny. I don't care about this relationship she has with Jay. in a way, I kind of like that it was somebody that he gave his sob story to and projected his sob story onto, and she's the one who turns on him. Again, if you really care about these characters, then this would feel pretty impactful. I just don't, so I'm just like, you know, he should have seen that coming. Could have been done worse.
I guess I kind of liked it, though. I liked it. Out of the whole city, they could have just, you know, taken a random person we've never seen before for this. So to at least have someone we're slightly familiar with and who has a connection to Jay, owes her life to him, I guess. Doesn't really owe her life to him, but, you know. It just gave it that little bit more than it just being a random kid.
Yeah, that's why I said it could have been worse. At least it's somebody who has a connection to him. They've attempted to form some connection between them, her being so grateful to him and the others, her helping out at the hospital, stuff like that, and seeming really not wanting to go back into the game. And we haven't seen any hint that Ginny has. I don't know how, if that, but that could be, someone could look at that and say it's cheap because there's been no exploration to Ginny struggling to stay away from the game. For all we know, she's been playing this whole time and lying to their faces, you know? And so it could have been worse, but it's fine. It's like whatever for me.
I guess they had to use her because there's not really anyone in the city that we've spent any time with other than, you know, the couple of leftover mall rats.
Like, if they'd actually shown that Ginny was struggling, you know, and these mall rats were shoring her up, and, you know, she admitted that some days are harder than others and stuff like that, and then she has to remind herself every time they help these kids in the hospital, this is why she's staying away, and on, then this downfall would actually be pretty heartbreaking, that she's fallen victim to her addiction to the game so badly that she would betray someone who saved her and who she's grateful to, and she feels badly about it. But again, they didn't do much with Ginny. So it's like, as I said, for all we know, she hasn't been struggling. She's been playing on the sly, you know, or something. And so you don't really feel anything except, oh, look at that, Jay, someone you trusted screwed you over.
Yeah, or if they had, like, actually gone for someone who doesn't play but just wants to win this prize in order to trade the lifetime pass for, you know, food, protection, whatever. Would have at least made it more interesting.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Lex would have gotten hold of a pass like that? He would have definitely gone for the highest bidder.
Yeah, but there was no exploration with Lex either. What his goals are, why he was trading the chips, you know, what he was trying to gain from it. I mean, they've already forgotten that's what Lex was doing until next season when they give him a new scam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this goes back to, like, believing that Jay's in danger. Like, if you want me to believe there's tension in this whole scenario, you're going to have to make Jay hide. You're going to have to actually make him take off that bloody tether uniform and actually feel like he's in danger for his life. But you just have him running around in that jumpsuit. It's like, no, I believe nothing's going to happen to him. Absolutely nothing. And obviously, it's comical that obviously the three Morats are the ones who find him.
Because how easy would it have been for him to just, you know, steal some clothes somewhere? A hat, maybe. Anything to hide his bloody outfit so they wouldn't recognize him anymore.
I mean, even Siva changed her outfit when she was sneaking out, like visually implying she really didn't want her husband to recognize her. She didn't want anyone to recognize her because she was off somewhere she wasn't supposed to be. She was putting in that little bit of effort to hide her identity. You know, even Ved changed into vert clothes to go out with Chloe sometimes so that he wasn't easily spotted and recognized as who he was because he was doing something he wasn't supposed to. You know, Jay's supposed to be in danger. His life's supposed to be in danger. And it doesn't even occur to him, none of this time, to change his clothes, throw something over himself. Nothing.
Even covering himself in mud would have helped at this point.
Oh, he would never dirty his face, his pretty face. That would never cross his mind.
Mud bath.
So visually, we're being told that Jay's not that concerned about his safety either. Like, no. On some level, he is not that worried about being recognized.
Or he's just not that bright, but we already knew that.
That's
he was happy enough to have a nap after a minute of cardio. Like, Jay, really?
He's so calm. She's like, you should take a nap. He's like, I am tired. I could use one. And, like, not the vigilant of, no, I couldn't sleep. I'm too anxious or whatever, you know, or something. Right. She should have had to really talk him into taking a nap or something, or trick him, give him some
drug him,
slip him something. In a drink, something. But no, he's just like, yeah, I'll have a nap. You keep watch. Yep. It's all fine.
This is good. I'll be fine.
Here on the floor is good. It's all right. Yep.
Yeah. That was 10 minutes of running, man. I am wiped.
Oh.
Yeah, he's just there for his looks.
And it might have worked if, like, after his torture with Ebony, he looked, like, worn out, you know? Because, again, when they get shot with the lasers and stuff is done to them, it's pretty arbitrary what the wounds are. You know, Ved just needed to stay overnight in hospital, and he was fine after his fight with Ram. And so, but at least Ved's body language showed that he was in some sort of pain, discomfort. Mm-hmm. He needed to be tended to. So it's like, okay, I get it. He needs rest. But Jay looks fine from the moment he walks out of the hotel. Looks like he wasn't tortured or nothing. Whatever Ebony did to him had no lingering effects. So it's like, what are you so tired for, dude? Like, that you need to take a nap while you're in danger. And he fell asleep quick. Like, the minute she said nap, his eyes were closed and he was unconscious. So much so she was able to get the laser off his wrist. I don't know about you, but when I'm trying to anxious sleep, I'm a light sleeper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And no. So it's just like, he's not even making us think he's in danger.
Rallying the new hospital militia, Siva searches for Jay, but comes across Ved instead.
Look, he's my brother. What am I supposed to do, forget about him?
We should work together.
This doesn't mean I'm leaving the Technos, okay?
Or I'm leaving the Morats.
You got it.
Come on.
What do you make of that small interaction between Siva and Ved?
I like that they at least show that Ved cares about his brother.
Yeah, it's expositional. It's pretty much it, you know. That's all it is. Like, Ved, he doesn't want this to happen to his brother. And then, but otherwise, it's just like, whatever. Okay. Thanks for letting us know that this doesn't mean you're switching sides. And Steve is like, I'm not switching sides either. We're just looking for the same person, dude.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad they added that line to Siva, because, like, yeah, I'm just helping to find Ginny. That's it. After escaping Ginny, Jay encounters Pride, who attacks him.
Pride? I'm not Virgil. I know too much about you. Listen. I know you're with the Ecos. You're with Amber. You loved her then. I think you still love her. I couldn't know that if I was computer generated.
Jay does manage to persuade him that this is reality, not part of the Graeme, as a crestfallen May listens from outside. Sia, what do you make of Jay's scenes with Pride and May's reaction to hearing that Pride might still be in love with Amber, which he does later deny?
Aside from the comical fact that Amber is the magic word that makes it possible for Pride to tell the difference between the game and reality all of a sudden, and he's totally calm and normal again after that conversation, I did think May's reaction was interesting. It implies that much of her hurt when she was taken was forgotten or buried deep. Because you think about it, May came back and she hasn't shown any animosity toward Pride, despite the fact that when she was taken, they were still on rough ground. And she was very insecure about he and Amber and whether he cared about her and the way he treated her. None of that came up once she returned, you know? And in fact, she was very team Pride and just observing the, you know, craziness happening in the mall, not seeming to connect with any of it, with anyone, to be honest. And I almost wonder if hearing those words brought, like, earthed, like, dug up those feelings that had been buried under, well, what was done to her, you know? Because why would she cry about that? If she's upset about Pride not loving her, shouldn't she be upset about he and Celine? Not Amber, who's not even in the picture. And I wonder if that moment dug up those past feelings that have been buried under her torture and mind control and addiction to the game, that she wasn't feeling any of them and might not have even remembered feeling those things until she heard it said out loud. But that's just speculation.
Yeah, because we never get any insight into what she's feeling.
I was like, why is she crying over that? Like, did you forget? And then I was like, what if she did? What if she forgot, you know? And almost like, instead of realizing that time has passed, she didn't get to go through those feelings because she went straight into the torture shacks, you know, with the technos after being taken. And all that stuff got pushed down and regressed. And she came back not even really thinking or remembering those feelings. She didn't seem bothered by Celine and Pride being together. That doesn't start until next season. Then she has an attitude about the two of them. Or is it this season? Whatever. Point is, it's not till after this moment that she starts to show any antagonism towards Celine and Pride's relationship or any of that. Like, it's only now she remembered she'd been in love with him, because she wasn't concerned about that when she came back at all.
Was anyone else annoyed by the fact that Jay magically knows that Pride might have had feelings for Amber?
I don't know. Maybe he's just inferring it. They had only one conversation where they were singing her praises.
Yeah, she won.
So, yeah. You know, that's it. And it's not like it was a deep conversation about Pride's heartfelt feelings, just that she's a great person. That was it, you know? And somehow Jay has been, I don't know, sometime, at some point he found out. Who knows? That was when he found out. These people don't talk to each other.
Yeah. We don't get those conversations anymore.
Right. Every conversation is exposition. You know, that's it. So I don't know when Jay found out that there had been a thing between Pride and Amber and that Pride was deeply in love with her, you know, and it's weird that he'd even bring that up. And if he knew, if we'd seen that conversation, then fine. Bring up something that you couldn't have possibly known, and that something he wouldn't have known unless he'd had those real conversations with Pride or somebody. But it's just weird bringing Amber into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Of all people, it's just weird. But that's because these people don't have any real conversations about anything. So what else was he supposed to reference, I guess?
Celine?
It's odd dialogue.
I get it. Like, okay, something secret that only the real me would know. But it doesn't work because you guys have had no conversation. So it's like,
right?
Why Amber? I don't get it. Why is Amber the secret thing that you would know? You guys aren't buddies. You guys don't know anything about each other. Like,
what? Exactly.
No, it doesn't work for me. And yeah, it would be nice to find out, like, from May's point of view, like, okay, yeah, you being with Celine doesn't faze me because I believe you were just there as a placeholder. You know what I mean? But you being in love with Amber, that still shakes me. I would have loved to have explored that. I'd love to have gotten something from her within the show, but.
No, it never really gets explained. She just, from this moment, suddenly becomes very bitter. And it's like, okay, so that's why I was like, maybe it's because she buried those feelings of hurt of him loving Amber and using her and lying to her and using her body and her well-being and her care for him while loving another woman. And that was something she'd forgotten she felt, you know, and in this moment it's brought back. And that's when she starts becoming very antagonistic towards he and Celine. But of course, that, again, that's headcanon. All that is.
It is a bit weird. May keeps running after Pride around this whole scene. I don't quite
understand. Yeah, I have no idea what the purpose of it is.
Yeah. It's beyond stalkery. I don't understand it.
It's really bizarre, you know? And again, it's never explained. It's like they didn't know what to do with May except to just keep her as a nefarious thing in the background. Maybe, again, more headcanon, but maybe May doesn't even remember that she was in love with Pride. Because remember, she comes back and doesn't really seem to be interested in him, bothered by the fact he's dating her ex-bestie at all. She doesn't show any genuine interest in trying to hook up with him. Every bit of interest she shows toward Pride is game related, right? Like she's just happy to have a fellow secret addict in the mall. And it's only after this moment it suddenly bothers her. And it's like, did you forget you were in love with him?
Possibly.
Maybe. Maybe she didn't remember any of that stuff. She just wiped clean, you know, and felt nothing towards really anybody in the mall. But after this, she will be very pissed off at he and Celine.
Mm-hmm.
Even that would have been a cool storyline to explore, like hidden memories resurfacing, like her feelings coming that like she didn't even realize she had, like coming conflict again with Celine and Pride. Like, it could have been good. Like, the show has potential still, but it does nothing with all the cards it has on the table. I just don't understand. Frustrating. As Patch and Dee are left to watch over the kids and the mall, Mouse realizes that Dee is protective of Patch because she has feelings for him. While in an awkward counterpoint scene, Patch and Sammy discuss how to act around girls. When the mall is overrun by a crowd thinking the Moretz are harboring Jay, Patch then blurts out to Dee that he does love her. How did you react to Patch and Dee's story in this episode?
I thought the scene between Mouse and Dee was kind of cute. I thought the scene between Patch and Sammy was pointless. How many times are we going to have a conversation between an older boy and a younger boy telling him about girls? And this is when it felt the most irrelevant. It made no sense that out of nowhere, Patch would start giving Sammy, almost begging Sammy to ask him for advice. And it came out of nowhere. It is very strange. Now, again, if they'd explored more that Patch, you know, has been dying to talk to somebody about his feelings about Dee, it would make some sense, but no. And so it's so weird that out of the blue, he's like, you want some advice about girls? And Sammy's like, what? Like, have I ever expressed an interest in girls? Have you seen me trying to mack with a girl? Where did this come from? So it just felt like the obligatory conversation we get every season. And this one felt the dumbest. And we'll get another one in season 5. And it really doesn't work because they're supposed to be guarding the mall. And then these kids come out of nowhere. And I'm like, are you saying the grill was wide open? Like, how did you not see these people come? You're on the stairs facing the entrance to the mall. How did they get in and you not see them until they're storming up the stairs?
This is like, even Jack is more effective at protecting them all. And he hides.
Why is the grill not down? If you're worried about, like, you know, the mall could be stormed. Why is the grill not down?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense how these people keep breaking into your mall. They're not coming through the sewers. So you just have the doors wide open. Why?
I have no idea.
I don't understand this. It's such a stupid scene. And I feel like it's all there just so that Patch can confess his love in the midst of chaos. Somebody thought that was cute. And it can be cute, that kind of confession. I've seen it done well before, okay? I don't think it's effective here.
No, it's not like his life was in danger or Dee's life was in danger. It was like, they're just running around the mall looking for Jay. Like, it was a weird point to split it out, I think, but...
Yeah. They're not even attacking you personally. No. They're wrecking your stuff. That's it. Like, you guys could just stand by and let them do it, and then they'd leave when they realize that Jay's not there. Like, not a single one of them would put a hand on you. There is no danger here. There's just a bit of chaos. You guys could just leave. You could just leave. They're not even holding you captive. They're not demanding answers. Somebody thought it would be cute, and it does not translate to what we're seeing. It reminded me of that scene in Harry Potter Deathly Hallows Part 2 where Neville is suddenly looking for Luna Lovegood in the middle of the castle being attacked, and their lives actually are in danger, and Neville's adrenaline is kicking, and he's like, I have to find Luna. I have to tell her that I love her because we'll probably both be dead by dawn. And it's like, it's a cute moment, you know, even though it comes out of nowhere because you didn't even know he had feelings for her, blah, blah, blah. But it works in that case because they're literally in the middle of a battle. That's the moment you would think, I need to say things that I may never get the chance to say again. And like, I may not be alive tomorrow, so I got no fear. I'm going to go find the girl I like and tell her I'm in love with her, you know. It doesn't work here. And it's also kind of weird because he literally just told Sammy, you don't chase girls. They don't like to be chased. They want to chase you. So you pretend you're not interested. And then immediately flips over. Maybe that's the joke, that he immediately flips at the first sign of stress and confesses his love to Dee. I don't know. I don't know what they were going for here.
It kind of feels like a cross between Ryan and Jack at this point. And then I mean season one Jack.
Yeah, I guess they were trying to go for that comedy angle, so to downplay the chaos in the mall. So, yeah.
the mall's not in danger. None of us are that concerned. Okay, you don't have to downplay anything. This is comical.
Just in case,
already.
Just in case you're scared, don't worry. Here's a comedy moment coming up. It's all right.
I mean, even Mouse isn't that scared. Like, the 6-year-old isn't that terrified of what... She just wants to know what's going on, but otherwise she's... You know, joking with Dee about, hey, do you like Patch? Like, she doesn't seem all that scared either. Like,
can you imagine? Season one, Patsy would have been terrified.
Well, that's because they were used to be in real danger.
Mm.
You know, like when the mall was going to be under siege, these guys were in genuine danger. And they had episodes where you got to see the kind of danger they were in if somebody made it inside their mall. Because they could do anything to you. You know, they could assault you physically, sexually. They could leave you to die. They could do anything they wanted to you. They could rip you from your home and make you their slaves. There was actual fear. You had to hide the children. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There were things you actually had to do. It was a sleepless night. These guys, all they had to do was lock their door.
And even that's too much effort.
Apparently. So it's like, what danger are they actually in?
As Lex and Celine catch up with Pride and Jay, Pride admits his mistakes to a disappointed Celine before helping to create a diversion which helps Jay escape.
What are you guys doing? Don't you know the Reds are closing in on Jay?
Where?
Sector 10. They're making fools of us while you're wasting time with these verts.
Sector 10, let's go.
I know where Jay is. He's safe.
Oh, thank goodness.
We're starting up a little tribal warfare of our own, Lex. Care to join us?
What do you make of Pride's reunion with Celine and the plan to help Jay by starting a mass brawl?
I actually liked this, I'll admit. I thought, oh, why haven't you guys thought of this kind of thing sooner? You know, maybe they didn't want the chaos. So they obviously didn't want the Reds and Blues to fight each other. So blah, blah, blah. I liked this plan. You know what I mean? I thought, okay, this is pretty useful. You know, play the teams against each other because you're trying to keep them from chasing Jay. That, you know, I thought that worked. Best part, though, is Ram's reaction to it. Why are they fighting each other? Why? My plan. It's like, Ram, if you stopped playing games, you could have just killed Jay. Like, you had him twice. But everything's got to be a game.
He's like such a toddler with a tantrum.
But yeah, I thought that was actually a pretty cool, you know, idea. Run to the gangs and tell them, you know, he's getting away. The other team's getting him, da-da-da. And then teams get together and they just automatically start fighting each other. Jay can get away, you know. It's like, okay, that's not bad.
I do like how Lex immediately gets into it. He's like, okay, yeah, fun.
Yeah. And I cried admitting to Celine, you know, I don't know. It works for what it is. You know, he sees that look on her face and she knows that he's been lying to her. And just seeing how hurt she looks, how disappointed, how crushed she is that he's broken her trust so hard. And her asking, did you sell my earrings? You know, and he's like, it's worse than that. You know what I mean?
And yet her first thought is on the earrings amidst everything.
I can't remember. Does it have any impact on their relationship at all? Does he have to win her back, her trust or anything?
Not really, as far as I know. I mean, they're going to have a couple of bumpy moments, I think, for the rest of the season. But there isn't, I don't recall there being much focus on it because they've got this whole Ram thing to deal with. And then, of course, in season 5, we jump to, he asked me to marry him. And it's like, when? When the frick did that happen? Why would you ever have said yes to that? So I feel like some of it's a blur because season 5 sort of retcons what was going on with them and makes it sound like everything was great and fine between them. I don't recall it being great and fine between them for the rest of season 4, though. I think there is definitely some stress. But I don't remember. This is just one moment. I thought it's a decent moment. But no, I don't think it's going to have some massive, like, impact on what happens next in their story.
No.
We just know that he will immediately be done with this addiction. So, for the most part.
That's how it works, right?
He just needed to hear Amber's name. And he's fine now.
We get a lot of quick cures, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, just say Amber and all is well with the world.
Just need to walk. There's a lot of quick curing that happens.
I wish real life worked like that. This gave me unrealistic expectations of life.
Yep, all you have to do is admit you have a problem and then it can be solved very quickly. You just have to admit it. You don't have to see you struggle with it, work through it, talk about your triggers, you know.
Oh, if only.
All right, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. As a frustrated Ram watches the crowds getting distracted, Ebony flees the hotel and finds Jay.
Jay!
Ebony! Oh, I thought I'd never see you again.
I was so worried.
We have to get out of here.
I know, but where?
Family picking aside by kissing him deliberately in front of the cameras, leaving Ram devastated. So yeah, how did you react to Ebony finally nailing her colours to the mast?
Of course she had to do it this way. Like, I don't mind that she does this because, seriously, Ram has it coming. But it just feels very primary school.
Okay. In its own bubble, the Jebony like shipper in me actually loves this moment. I remember just being like, yeah, oh my gosh, like, you know, they're going to live, they're going to, they can be love each other. She's no longer afraid. She going for her man. And what a baller way to let your husband know it was never real, buddy. Like, that's how you divorce someone in the petty world of Ebony, right? So in its own little bubble, I love it for Jay and Ebony, okay? And if you ship them, this is a great moment between them. In the grand story of Jay and his manipulations and what he does to the women he claims to love, this just reminds me that here is Ebony. This whole time, they've been at odds because they want different things and they want to get them in different ways. And Jay, when you look back, you start to realize that Jay wanted a woman who would give up everything for him, even though he wasn't willing to do the same. And this is the moment where Ebony gives up everything. She burns every bridge for him. And he's got no bridges, so she's all he's got. But as soon as something else comes along, he's already going to be tired of her. He's tired of her before the season. Like, we're episode, 44? So we got, 6 episodes left. Here is Ebony in episode 44 saying, "I give it all up for you. Security, safety, everything, power. I'm going to be on the run now. I'm doing that because I love you. I choose you." And within 6 episodes, this man is already going to abandon her.
Mm-hmm.
Because he got what he wanted. He broke her down and she gave up everything that ever mattered to her for him. And within 6 episodes, he's already got his eyes on the next prize. So by itself, it's great. But in the whole picture, it's like, oh, no. No! Oh, it kind of kills me.
She deserved better.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's crazy when you think you phrase it like that. Yeah.
Like, when it came to Ebony and, like, Bray, no, she didn't deserve anything from Bray. Okay? No. Bray owed her nothing. All right? She put that man through hell just because he didn't requite her feelings. And she would hurt anybody who mattered to him just to punish him for not loving her. But this time, it does feel like she deserved better than Jay. Because she gave it she gave him everything, you know? And it seemed like they were on the same page. It seemed like they were a team. And we get, 2 episodes of them being on the same team. And then, poof, goes up in smoke that quickly. Because he got what he wanted. And he's no longer interested. 2 episodes, guys. I'm pretty sure that's all it's going to take. And then Amber's going to pop up and Jay's going to be talking whole new game.
Can't wait to see this transition.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts my soul.
I just want to see how badly it is. If I remember it as badly as I think.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to have some things to say. This place on fire. Oh my gosh. But yeah, just this moment by itself. I love it. And I hate it. And I like it because it feels a lot like it's one of the few and only relationships in this season that actually lets itself build and have conflict, even if the conflicts were stupid. You know what I mean? There was a back and forth, a push and pull. And if you were a fan, it left you wanting, will they, won't they? Will they, won't they? Are they ever going to get there? And it's a lot like Bramber in season 1, you know, for the Bramber fans. So when those two finally admit how they feel and they share that kiss, you're like, oh my gosh, finally! You know what I mean? It made you want it. It made you long for it. And I feel like season 4 does that with Jay and Ebony. It makes you, you know, invested in the push and pull, even if you're like, you guys are so dumb. You're so stupid. Why are you doing this to me? And so this moment when she chooses him above everything, you know, and you believe that's what he wanted and he should be thrilled and they'll live happily ever after somehow, you finally get that moment. And none of the other characters really give that to you. None of the other pairings, you know, make you want it, make you long for it, you know? And they could have had something here if they didn't decide to blow it up before the season was even over.
But no, we're not allowed to have nice things.
I don't think anything else to
say. I was going to say, is that it? Are we done?
I think we're done.
See, time-wise, we could have time-wise, we could have easily done two. Because there's so little in these episodes.
That brings Series 4, Episode 44, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe, and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment, or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for thetribe.co.uk, or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time, Episode 45. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.